You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 66, Super Weapon Recycling Program. Today on the program, Spider-Man Homecoming, the trailer we've all been waiting for. Will this be the proper Spider-Man movie that we've been waiting for? GameCube emulation coming to Nintendo Switch, potentially? And Windows 10 running on ARM processors. What is the world coming to? When everything is broken.
Myself. Underoos!
Hey everyone.
I get to keep the suit?
Of course. Doesn't fit me.
Just don't do anything I would do. And definitely don't do anything I wouldn't do. There's a little gray area in there, and that's where you operate.
What's up, guys? Wait a minute. You want the real Avengers?
But this does not mean you're an Avenger, in case you were wondering.
Oh.
That's not a hug. I'm just grabbing the door for you.
Oh.
All right, kid. Good luck out there.
The world's changing, boys.
Time we change, too.
Listen, Peter, forget the flying monster guy. There are people who handle this sort of thing.
I was sick of him treating me like a kid.
But you are a kid.
This is my chance to prove myself.
Don't mess with me. Because I will kill you and everybody you love.
So that was the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming, which is a new Sony, heavy air quotes, Spider-Man movie. Essentially, it's a Marvel Studios movie. They just let Sony produce it.
Yeah, it's a Sony movie in name. Basically, they're the...
Yeah,
they've
like
packaged it up in a Sony label, but it's a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I think like this basically has to do with the deal where Sony has the rights to Spider-Man for movies, but Marvel wants it back like real bad. And then because Sony Pictures didn't do so well for the past few years, there was that big hack and all that other stuff, and they started losing a ton of money. And that put them in a vulnerable position. So my bet is Disney came up to them and said, hey guys, you know how you have that Spider-Man rights thing? Why don't we give you some money and you still get to produce the films, but we're going to make them and they're going to be awesome. And you get money and we get money and everybody's happy.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we got Spider-Man in Civil War, and now we're getting Spider-Man in his own movie within the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
Tony Stark is in it, and yeah, it's going to be pretty good from the looks of it. I think Tom Holland has definitely nailed the character, more so than the previous actors. Like, I think he has the physicality that'll roll down. In the comics, Spider-Man wisecracks all the time. And the writing for that in previous movies has been kind of inconsistent, but usually it's on the ball. But I think where Tom Holland improves on that is he gets the physicality of the wisecracking right because Spider-Man's wearing his mask all the time. So you can't really see him tell a joke. You kind of have to see him joke. And that, I think, is what he gets really right in this film. Just the clip where he surprises the burglars and goes, "Ah, you're not the real Avengers?" Yeah, like, just look at his body language in that scene, and I think he just pulls it off really well, because you get this, you just kind of get this sense of him telling the joke without him, without seeing his mouth move.
Yeah, I agree on all of those things. He definitely seems like he really fits the role. I mean, obviously he's the youngest we've ever had for...
Which helps.
Peter Parker / Spider-Man on screen. So I don't know if there's something to that. I mean, the fact that he is younger, maybe that brings something to the character that it needs.
Because Peter Parker is supposed to be young. He's not supposed to be a 30-year-old pretending to be a 20-year-old.
Right, exactly.
He's a kid. He's like a senior in high school when he becomes Spider-Man, when he gets bitten by the radioactive spider or genetically modified spider or... ancient spider avatar spirit, like in that one ridiculous story arc. But anyways,
I'm just glad we're not going through this whole rigmarole of an origin story yet again, because this has been told so many times. They've tried to reboot Spider-Man a bunch of times, and they haven't done very well with that.
I think they handled it really well in Civil War, where it was just like, he was already Spider-Man, all the stuff with Uncle Ben is done, like, we've seen that 500 times. We don't need to see it again. So they just cut to him already being Spider-Man, already having like the kind of shitty handmade suit and everything. And then Tony Stark comes along and gives him an upgrade, which makes sense, because in the previous films, it was like, how exactly is Tobey Maguire suddenly an expert tailor? Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Where, like, did that come from?
How did he make this incredibly bespoke custom athletic suit out of scraps? Exactly. Like, it didn't really make a lot of sense. So I like that he starts out having this terrible outfit, and then Tony Stark comes along and is like, "Oh, this is a disgrace. I'll tell you what. I'll do a better one. I'll do a better one." And then he does. And then it's like the Spider-Man suit. And in this one, he apparently gets wings as well. That's been a somewhat inconsistent ability on the suit ever since the beginning. It used to be more common, like in the beginning of the franchise. He did have the wings, and I mean, it wasn't like proper flight, but it did give him some gliding ability to go from wall to wall or between swings.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a cool effect.
Yeah. It's definitely neat. And I'm glad that they've brought it back, because in recent years, it's been kind of inconsistent. Like in the early days, he had it all the time. And then later on, it was like when they felt like it, he had it. And it's nice to see them kind of bring back that old skill set.
I don't even remember when it was that the first time I actually saw that. Just trying to think, was it in a comic? Was it in the one of the cartoon
Spider-Man
series?
Spider-Man number one, he actually
Spider-Man
has the
number
wings.
One. Oh, right. Yeah, that iconic pose where he's holding the criminal and he's midair and he's got the webbing between his armpit and the suit.
So he had it like day one.
Right.
And then in recent years, he's like either had it or not had it, depending. So it's cool that they've got that callback there.
Yeah.
Another nice touch is the eyes with the telescoping.
Yeah, which is a Tony Stark technology.
Yes.
Which was established in the Civil War movie, where he gets a replacement costume.
Yeah. I actually really like that detail, because A, it makes him more expressive, even while you can't see his face.
Absolutely.
But also, it makes sense in terms of the plot, because that scene when Tony Stark's in his bedroom examining the first version of the suit, he's like looking at these goggles and he's like, can you even see through these things? And he's like, yeah, I need them because I can just kind of see everything and I need to be able to focus. So I like, it's hard for me. And then suddenly he's got these cool, like telescoping camera lenses in his mask.
And they haven't actually showed what it looks like through his eyes, but I imagine that it gives him some significant advantages to zoom in on something maybe and see something up close like a
macro. I think it's not just that. Like, I think to his comment about needing to be able to focus and like everything being too sensitive, it probably also helps with that. Like, it helps him kind of hone his vision down to just focusing on the bad guy or whatever, wherever he's trying to go, that kind of thing, without all of that sensory overload. So it's like a nice touch. Like, really, it's kind of an excuse for the cool telescoping lenses, but it rings true, I guess. Like, because he has spider sense, right? But they've never quite adequately explained what that is, except for the part where he senses danger behind him suddenly. But it would follow that all of his senses are heightened, and that's how it works. So, of course, like, his eyes would be more sensitive to light and so on. So if he's like going around, he needs to be able to kind of dial that back a bit. So, kind of a throwaway line in the movie, but it helps kind of explain the whole thing.
And when is this coming out? This is 2017 at the end of the trailer, but I don't know if they've come up with an exact date yet.
I think it's like May or April.
Right.
I think it's like an early summer blockbuster.
I just hope that this movie is the Spider-Man movie that we've actually been waiting for. I really, really do hope that is the case.
I think it will be. I think we've got an actor that really understands the character. He's the right age to play Peter Parker, I'd say. I mean, it basically helps that he was just a high school senior, or still is, I don't know. So, I mean, that probably helps immensely with the character.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I think they've got the right actor. They've got the full force of the Marvel writing team behind them. So, I mean, they know how to write Spider-Man. So, yeah, like, just fitting him in and kind of recreating these classic Spider-Man villains. Like, the Vulture looks great. They've got him in this cool, like, bomber jacket where the fleece on the collar kind of evokes
a bird,
the white feathers on a vulture.
Yeah, well, because they can't put him buzzard in a stupid leotard like in the comics. Well, the green one bot, like,
yeah,
the
exactly
unibody leotard, like, thing.
It kind of evokes it without being like super what the fuck
theatrical and you know, corny.
So it reminds you of the way the character normally looks, but it's modernized and like it's a proper take on it. Like, it's, I would say it's almost like what Christopher Nolan did for Batman. Like, you have these ridiculous villains, and then he kind of just said, okay, what if that was a real person doing real bad stuff? What would they look like? And that's what this is. And it seems like they're going for kind of an angle where this guy scavenges technology, which makes sense because Vulture. His wings actually look like a combination of the wings on Falcon from Civil War and Winter Soldier and so on.
That did come to mind, but isn't in the comics.
And also Tony Stark's repulsor tech. Like,
right.
It looks like it has two massive repulsor engines on either side of the
maybe
wings.
There's something there with that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's like where they're going.
It feels like he's kind of cobbled together a bunch of stuff, and there will probably be a bunch of callbacks. Like, maybe he salvaged Ultron bot pieces from Sokovia or something, and he's like got all of this stuff and he's cobbled it together to make these weapons and the wings and the suit and everything.
But isn't the Vulture, like in the comics, supposed to be an inventor? Isn't he a scientist?
He is, yeah. And
I don't know if they're going to do that in the movie.
Well, I think, I mean, going by Iron Man 2, all you really need to be a supervillain is to be a skilled electrical engineer. So, you know, if this hardware is just lying around and you have the skill to be able to put it together into something else, you know, it's probably not that difficult.
I don't know much about the character, but all I remember is the Spider-Man cartoon in the 90s, the Vulture, he developed this technology that would absorb the life energy of people to make him temporarily younger. I don't know if that was actually in the comics or just a cartoon thing. Does that ring a bell?
It was probably in the comics.
And his name is Adrian Toomes, right?
Mm, yeah.
I should check Wikipedia here.
It's hard to say how much of that they'll actually retain for the backstory of this character. Because the backstories for several Marvel characters in the cinematic universe have been quite different. So I'm not sure exactly how much they'll keep.
I just pulled this up on Wikipedia here. Can you imagine if he looked like that in the movie? It would be ridiculous. Obviously, people listening to this can't tell.
Bird outfit.
But yeah, he just looks like a bird in a bird outfit. It looks really corny.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely one of the cornier villains. But I like this new interpretation where it's basically like recycled Stark tech and this like flight suit sort of thing. It's definitely a cool aesthetic, and it reminds you of that iconic outfit without actually being that outfit.
Right.
So the costume designers obviously did a really good job on that. And even if you look at the wings, it's actually kind of green, purple-ish, kind of like the wings on the costume.
Yeah, I saw a still image of it. I liked it. I thought it looked pretty good. So Wikipedia here, it says Adrian Toomes, born in Staten Island, New York, former electronics engineer who was once the business partner of Gregory Bessman. Bessman handled the finances whilst Toomes handled the inventions. One day after creating a flight harness, Toomes eagerly rushed into Bessman's office to share the happy news. However, Bessman was not there, and Toomes discovered that Bessman had secretly been embezzling funds and that Toomes had no legal recourse, meaning he lost his job. Enraged, Toomes wrecked the business, discovering that the harness also granted him superhuman strength. He then decided to turn to crime professionally as the Vulture. It does actually... It says the harness endows him with enhanced strength and, according to some sources, increases his lifespan.
Mm.
Although Toomes is advanced in age, he is a strong fighter and a remorseless killer. On one occasion, he restored his youth through biochemical means. Though this wore off after exposure to an elemental superhuman's corpse. At one point, he had used the device to steal Spider-Man's youth, leaving Vulture young and Spider-Man elderly. See, actually, that was a plot in the cartoon that they actually took from the comics.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen this time.
And that actually happened, according just for sources for super comic nerds, The Amazing Spider-Man number 387. That was the issue.
All right.
So we'll see how much of that they take. They'll probably take bits and pieces of the character from the comic.
Based on the cobbled together tech, like it looks like it's Stark tech. I mean, all the villains seem to have like cobbled together stuff from Stark tech, basically. He really needs to lock that shit down.
You know, for like, a guy with all his high-tech technology, you think the security would be a little bit better.
Like if you're going to leave repulsor engines and arc generators lying around, you know, you really shouldn't. You should burn those, like. Seriously. He just creates all the world's villains by leaving this shit lying around.
Yeah. Come on, Tony. Jeez. You can do better.
Yep. Need to set up a super weapon recycling program. Anyways. So, based on that, I could see him maybe being like a former employee of Stark Industries or something. Like a New York office. Something like that, like he was an engineer working on some sort of flight thing. but then the project got shelved after Iron Man, something like that, where it's like, well, we don't really need your thing now because we have magic repulsor Iron Man stuff. So he got probably got laid off and he has a grudge, or like, it'll be something.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like their fallback position for villains always seems to be pissed off at Tony Stark for some reason. That's usually how it goes. Like,
it all boils down to Stark.
Whiplash, everything that happened with Civil War, like it all goes back to Stark. Ultron, just like everything, it's all his fault or his dad's fault or something. You know, you can never trust a Stark. Who? What?
What else? There was a bunch of other stuff that I saw this week. Now, my mind's gone completely.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking all Spider-Man. So what else? Microsoft announced that Windows 10 is going to support ARM with full x86 emulation.
Ah, yes.
They showed Photoshop running on a Snapdragon chip.
So they're ahead of Apple.
If you can call running on a Snapdragon ahead of Apple.
I saw somebody tweet that, like, you know, Apple's fallen behind, whatever happened to, you know, ARM chips and Mac OS, but...
Oh, I guarantee you there's a MacBook with an ARM chip in it somewhere at Apple headquarters. Like, or 5 or 10. Like, it exists. It definitely exists. The question is, like, where does Mac go from here? And where does iOS go from here? I think we're kind of at a crossroads right now where it's like, well, we can either merge them into one operating system, which, I mean, that's kind of the pragmatic option where it's all the same and everything has the same APIs and you just create a build target for Mac. But I think what they intend to do is cannibalize the Mac. iOS is basically destined to replace Mac OS down the road, and they're just going to keep updating iOS until it can pretty much do all the same things that Mac OS can do. Just rethought for touchscreens and voice interface and AR and all of this other stuff that they're working on. And cars and watches and like I see iOS as their intended universal platform, where it's like, okay, we have the Mac, but really that's just sitting around until people can develop iOS apps on iOS and make everything on iOS. And I mean, that's still several years away. For sure. Like, iOS becoming as versatile for professional use cases as macOS is not happening overnight. I think they will start taking steps to that in the spring with the upcoming iOS 10.3 update for iPad, at which point they also announce the new iPad Pros and hopefully an updated Apple Pencil. But that'll just be the start of it. Like, they're not going to completely overhaul it with one update. It'll be definitely a lot of huge improvements and big changes to the UI that make iPad a lot more capable. But it still won't be at that level where it's like, okay, I'm a professional and I code and I design things in Photoshop and I do all this other stuff. Can I replace my laptop with an iPad? At that point, no, probably not. But we'll be closer to that point than we were before. So, I mean, I think that's probably the direction they're headed in which case we might never see a Mac running an ARM chip. Instead, it'll just be an iPad Pro with a version of iOS that's at that point so versatile that it may as well be Mac OS. And at that point, do you really need the Mac? Probably not, because if it can do all the same stuff.
Yeah, but the other thing is whether or not they would allow, I mean, obviously you can use Bluetooth keyboards with iOS devices, but the biggest thing for me is a mouse for professional stuff. I just don't want to have to use a touchscreen for a lot of the more intensive stuff like audio editing. Still not quite there.
Yeah.
I do, you know, I grew up with a mouse and a keyboard. Those are the input devices that feel the most comfortable for doing a lot of the intensive tasks. I mean, sure, I can get away with using iOS or any touch-based device. I can get away with using that for browsing the web or just doing basic stuff, a consumption-based tasks as opposed to producing stuff. And not to mention, obviously, there's a whole nother bigger discussion about, you know, specifically if we're talking about professional video audio stuff, iOS does not have any kind of infrastructure, but framework for developing plugins and stuff like that for audio. Like Pro Tools doesn't exist. Logic doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, those things don't exist on iOS. So until the OS gets to the point where like Apple has to continue to work on it to actually even get these third party professional developers to even consider making versions of those apps for iOS, right? I think we're quite a ways away from that.
Yeah,
like I'm thinking like, more than a couple of years.
I think we're inching closer for sure. And I mean, at the same time, we're kind of seeing MacBooks become more like iPads with the Touch Bar and Touch ID and all of that stuff. I think with that, they're kind of adding things back from iOS where it makes sense to do so. But they're not going to overall replace Mac with an iPad.
Do you think they'll ever do a wireless, like, you know, you can buy like an Apple wireless Bluetooth keyboard. Do you think they'll ever do an external keyboard like that with the OLED Touch Bar on it?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Because that would be a cool thing to have for the iMac.
That'll be next year, probably. And it'll cost like $200, $300.
In fact, if they wanted to get people away from the mouse, because I know a lot of people with iMacs that have just the actual glass touchpad, which is obviously a separate purchase, but it would be really cool if they just made the keyboard and touchpad thing like one big thing, like one device, and then have the OLED Touch Bar above it. That would be really cool.
The only thing with that is you kind of want your keyboard and your mouse trackpad to be at different angles because you're typing, and then you want like I always tend to angle them a bit. So to have it as one single block, I don't know. It might not be as ergonomic, but that's just my preference.
Right.
I think the Touch Bar will probably come to desktop peripherals, but I don't know. I don't know if it'll be wired first. They generally don't like to do wired things, so I'm not sure.
I can't see them doing any wired versions.
But then at the same time, it's like how much power drain is there on the Touch Bar and what kind of battery would you have to put in to ensure that it... Well, then again, I mean, the current iteration of the Magic Keyboard is now rechargeable with a Lightning port. So maybe they're not as concerned about it anymore. Like, if the keyboard lasts a month without the Touch Bar and like 2.5 weeks with it, because OLED has like very minimal power drain and the whole screen is black except for the buttons. So, I mean, yeah, maybe it's not a huge power drain. Maybe it only shaves like a few days overall off of the total battery life. Yeah, maybe they're not that concerned about it because you just charge it up or leave it plugged in and it's a wired keyboard. Yeah. But it'll cost you. Let's put it that way. Like when they come out with this thing, it will not be cheap.
No.
It'll...
Like, I think just a Bluetooth keyboard with OLED Touch Bar would probably be $200 and something.
Well, the current Magic Keyboard in Canada is like $169.
Is it really that expensive?
Yep. Well, it's a solid block of aluminum with a rechargeable lithium-ion battery.
Oh, right. I forgot. And they charge more because I have the original first generation Bluetooth keyboard. That thing was only like $80.
Yeah, that wasn't as complex as this. Like, this has the new, like, it's not the butterfly keys, but the one before that. And it's typeset in San Francisco, and the whole thing's a solid, like, chunk of aluminum. It's got the lightning port on the back and the rechargeable battery inside it. And I think it's Bluetooth 4.1 low energy. So, I mean, add all that together and yeah, the $169 price tag kind of makes sense. So then add a touch bar on top of that. And yeah, we're easily talking $200 or $300 for one, probably. Canadian. It'll probably be like $269, $249 US or something like that, maybe. Because I think it's like $100 US. Or $129 US maybe. I'm not sure. I'd have to check the Apple site. But yeah. So they'll probably charge like $249 or $269 US for a touch bar keyboard. And then it'll be even more here. Because that's how our exchange rate works now. Because it's at 75 cents to the dollar. I'd say thanks Obama, but that's not really appropriate anymore, is it?
No, not really. Well, I mean, he's technically still president, I guess, during the transition, right? Until
January, whatever. Yeah,
until Trump is sworn in.
Oh, God. Ugh. Oh, well. Then I guess we can wrap it up with Nintendo. Yeah. Okay. So Super Mario Run comes out next week. Nintendo America president Reggie Fils-Aimé went on Jimmy Kimmel to talk all about it and show a demo, and looks really fun. They also announced that Super Mario Run is available right now in Apple stores as a demo on all of the iPhones right now. So you can actually run into an Apple store right now and play Super Mario Run.
Nice. I will have to go and do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual release is coming up because it's coming out this month, right?
Next week. Yeah.
Nice.
The 13th, the 15th?
Yeah. It's close.
Something like that. And then they had a surprise. They had a one more thing.
Oh, did they?
Yes. They lifted up a question mark block and there was the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, right.
Yes. And they played Zelda at a much smoother frame rate than the Wii U version.
I've never played it, but which Zelda game is this?
The new one.
Yeah, what's it called? I have no idea.
Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Breath of the Wild,
so
okay.
So that is the new game that comes out next year with the Switch, presumably.
Now, visually, will it have any enhanced graphics, or is it just going to run at a better frame rate?
Well, it's hard to say. Due to the art direction, like, it's cel-shaded, kind of like Wind Waker, but it's a more painterly style. They've kind of been playing with it since...
And this will run at 4K on the Switch with HDR support, right?
Yeah, totally. For sure. No. It's probably going to run at 1080p.
Mm-hmm.
I would think 60 frames, but it's hard to know for sure if it's going to be 60 frames or not.
Pretty amazing that in that small form factor of the Switch that they managed to fit in a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty good. It's in card form now. Yeah, cartridges.
Yeah, they really got their engineering down and Nintendo now.
It's really good. It has a kickstand too.
Kickstand, wow.
Yeah. Can prop it up.
Sweet. And how many? It's got like five USB-C ports, right?
Yep, definitely. Gotta have those futuristic peripherals. apparently, it does actually charge with USB-C, as it turns out. So you're partially correct there. So it will have a USB-C port to charge it. And presumably, the Nintendo Switch dock is also USB-C. This will mark the first time in a very long time, if ever, that Nintendo has used a non-proprietary port for charging. So, yay for Nintendo, using an open standard.
That is very good.
Yes.
And now all other consoles need to follow suit. and get away from micro, because micro USB is a really terrible connection. Like, it's not reversible. It's like finicky. Yeah, you can't always get it in right. Like,
I mean, we've been saying this a while. We've been beating on this drum a while. I mean, Lightning was a huge revelation, and USB-C is no different. Obviously, everything needs to move to USB-C, and things are. It's just taking time. So, I mean, it's great that Nintendo is taking this step and actually using an open standard so that you can literally plug your Switch into your computer to charge it, or a battery pack, or whatever, and not have to worry about some proprietary ridiculous thing. Like with the Nintendo 3DS, it has this weird, really weird port for charging that looks like a micro FireWire cable. It's
micro. I haven't even heard of micro. Wait, no, I have heard of micro FireWire. That was a thing.
Was it a thing? Well, I think so. That's kind of what it looks like, but it's not.
I think old digital video cameras had micro FireWire for a while.
Okay.
Anyway, well, sorry, that's going off on a tangent to derail the conversation.
It looks like that, but it's only for charging. And the only official Nintendo charger with that cable is the AC adapter that comes in the box. There are no official USB cables that have that port on the other end. There are third-party cables, but that's if you trust those. There's like a bunch on Amazon from no-name brands that probably just like rewired it together or something. So, I mean, maybe they work just fine, but there's a chance they won't. So it's like a very shaky situation, because maybe you're not always near a wall outlet, and maybe you want to charge your 3DS, but you can't because it's this ridiculous proprietary port. So it's huge that Nintendo is using USB-C for this, because you will be able to charge it anywhere on anything with anything. Huge step forward for them hardware wise. Again, we're hearing reports that the screen is 720p, which means it should be able to run at 60 frames a second on the device. Plugged into a TV, it might be 30 frames, 1080p. For some games, it might be 60. Depends on how far they're pushing the chip. Other than that, we don't really know many details still. We have to wait for the January event. People have speculated some things, and obviously we have like rumored information. But just based on the footage of the Switch on Jimmy Kimmel, we'll include a link in the show notes. It's a lot thinner than I was expecting it to be, based on the initial reveal trailer. On Jimmy Kimmel, it actually looks quite thin and quite small compared to the way it looked in the debut trailer. It looks to be roughly the size of a Nexus 7 or an NVIDIA Shield tablet, and about as thick as probably about as thick as 2/3 of the new Nintendo 3DS XL. So it's like almost as thick, but it looks like it's slightly thinner. So basically like cut off the top screen part, and that's about as thick as the Switch is, or it appears to be. And the screen actually did a surprisingly good job still displaying stuff under direct studio lighting. Like, you could see the reflection of the studio lighting, and you could still kind of make out Zelda on it. So I wouldn't say it's like perfect anti-glare, but it definitely has some anti-glare on there. So it'll probably handle direct sunlight fairly well for an LCD display. That's if it is LCD. It could be OLED, but
I doubt
then
it.
Then it would cost a lot more. No,
it's probably whatever, you know, the current highest quality IPS LED display you can get, right?
Yeah.
Which are now pretty common and inexpensive to buy.
Yeah, exactly. At this point, they could probably use something similar to what Apple has.
And there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with those displays.
Nope.
They look pretty good.
And I mean, even at 720p, if this is a 7-inch screen, it'll still be Retina. And it'll still like look really sharp. And as a result, it'll be the first high-res Nintendo device.
It's a big deal.
3D,
it's a big deal for Nintendo.
Yeah, like the 3DS, the resolution for the 3DS has been unchanged. It's still like, I want to say it's like 640 by 320 or something ridiculous. Like it's nowhere near the resolutions we have today. Even now, like they released a new one and they still didn't bump up the resolution. It was still the same panel in there. Oh, actually, more to that point, you know how I was saying last episode that there's going to be a third version of Nintendo for the Switch with updated graphics?
Yeah.
So it turns out that Pokemon Sun and Moon actually have some of those assets in there already, which suggests that this Switch version is running off of the exact same code base as the existing games. And the reason for that is they got Sun and Moon into an emulator and they were able to upscale to 1080p. And a really funny thing happened when they did that. A shit ton of the textures and assets suddenly became these beautiful high-res cel-shaded things. So all of the Pokemon, the character models, some of the environment stuff, like the trees and things, and then details on interior maps, like rooms and buildings, a bunch of stuff like that ended up suddenly being like retina sharp with this beautiful cel shading on it. The text menus were still blurry. A bunch of other things were still blurry, but it proved that they have been working on this with the intention of having high-res assets for some reason. And, I mean, if the 3DS can't display assets at that resolution, what is it all for then?
Well, it's for the Switch.
Exactly. So, I mean...
And all the more reason to eventually discontinue the 3DS, because that is not the best way to display your products.
Exactly. So... Because of that, we know more or less what Pokemon will look like on the Switch, and it's beautiful. Like, suddenly, you're going from this sort of blurry 3D game to Zelda Wind Waker, more or less. Like, that's what it suddenly looks like with these upscaled assets. It's this beautiful, cel-shaded masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Super clean, super sharp.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Can't wait to play it all over again on the Switch. It's going to be pretty cool.
I've really lost touch with Nintendo. I really do need to get into some of these modern
games. There's no better time.
I haven't bought anything Nintendo since the NES. Actually, I'm not joking. I have an NES. That's the only Nintendo console I have.
So on that note, I have other good news. So it turns out that Nintendo is currently working on GameCube emulation for the Switch. For Virtual Console.
That was a fantastic console.
Yes, it was.
Did I ever tell you that I actually owned a Nintendo Cube for a very short period of time of like 3 months?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of time.
No, I don't even remember why I sold it. I think it was because it wasn't HD. And I was just like, wow, this doesn't look that great.
That was a huge mistake.
But
man,
there were so many great games on
there.
And I really wish I had it, because I think I even had the Wavebird controller for that too, which was nice.
Yep. First and best wireless controller. Still is after all this time, because it uses like this really solid RF transmitter signal. Yeah.
And the battery doesn't die like the latest DualShock controller.
They last forever because it's a radio signal. It's not Bluetooth. It's like it takes like practically no power to run. It's amazing. And the latency is ridiculous. Like, unless you have like a ham radio operator in your house, it works perfectly. Like, Nintendo gets so many things wrong, but when it comes to controllers, they fucking nail it every time. Like, the GameCube controller is still one of the best analog controllers, to the point where when they released the new Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, they re-released the GameCube controller. And this wasn't like some modified version or some updated version. No, it was literally the GameCube controller.
And a lot of people bought it.
And they made more of them. Yeah, I have two of them.
Yeah.
It's literally the same model number. They didn't change it at all. And that's just a testament to how perfect they were the first time around. So anyways, they are going to add emulation for GameCube games through Virtual Console on the Switch. And some of the titles that they're looking at are Luigi's Mansion, Super Smash Bros. Melee, and Super Mario Sunshine, arguably three of the best games for the GameCube. Plus, they're also supposedly looking at Animal Crossing. And for those of you who remember Animal Crossing for the GameCube, it had inside of it several NES classic games that you could play. And they got that working too, according to this story. Meaning, you can play an NES classic game emulated inside of a GameCube game, emulated on a Switch, on the bus. Nintendoception.
You know, that reminds me of in Wolfenstein The New Order.
Yes.
There's one part of the game where you can actually play the original Wolfenstein game.
Yep.
Within it.
They did the same thing in Doom.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
There's like secret
yeah, they did.
Doom
yeah.
levels.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So obviously somebody had a lot of spare time on their hands to take apart these assets and examine all this stuff to find it out, which is really cool. I'm glad there are people out there that do that for our benefit.
Yeah. So much nostalgia. I like, honestly, I cannot wait for GameCube games to be on that thing. Like, oh my God.
It's going to be great.
Okay. Nintendo, if you're listening to this, please, for the love of God, release Paper Mario Thousand Year Door for Switch Virtual Console. Please do it.
What's so great about it?
It's only like one of the best RPGs of all time.
Oh, really?
Probably, yeah. I mean, Paper Mario was pretty great, but Thousand Year Door really nailed it with the writing and the jokes and everything. Just a really solid game.
I haven't heard anything from PlayStation Now in a while. The streaming service for the PS4. I know they're continuing to add titles every month, which is fine.
Yep.
But I know a lot of people that would absolutely love to see PlayStation 2 titles come to the PS4.
Supposedly they are working on that.
They've got to be.
Yeah.
They've got to
be. I mean, there are PS2 titles you can buy for PS4 that run on PS4. So it
Well, maybe upscaled versions.
But yeah. I mean,
those are re-releases, remasters. Yeah.
And they run on the hardware. Yeah. So, I mean, it stands to reason that they should be able to offer them. It's just a matter of, because the way the PlayStation Now servers work is they actually have a bunch of PS3 and PS4 chips in server racks. So
are they like literally rack mounting consoles in there somehow and using their own? So do they use their own custom software to somehow control all of them and link them all together?
Yes. So when you're playing a game on PlayStation Now, you're actually streaming the game from a server-mounted PS3.
That is crazy.
and you're just remotely controlling it. So it's like a variant of remote play, except you're connected to a console on the server.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really crazy how they're doing that. But so, I mean, the only roadblock to PS2 would be that they're probably running into some kind of issue putting the PS2 chips into this system. Like, maybe it wasn't designed for that. Maybe there's like some sort of hardware limitation with the chip architecture, stuff that they're having to try and work around. And maybe the workarounds are messing with the gameplay somehow. So, like, and then of course they have to weigh like, okay, how long and how much money is it going to take to figure this out versus how many people are actually going to play PS2 games on PlayStation now. And I mean, if those numbers don't match up, then it's like, well, this is lower priority for us. So I don't know. It might happen. It might not happen. It depends how much demand there is for it. I mean, there are a lot of PS2 titles that I wouldn't mind playing again.
Yeah, there's fantastic titles on that console.
It's just a matter of like, how easy is it to actually offer them? So, I mean, if it's this big challenge for their R&D team to try and figure out how to re-emulate them, maybe it's not going to happen.
I really wish I could see the numbers on their end for how many people are actually paying for PlayStation Now, because it's not cheap.
No.
I mean, it isn't cheap, but in many ways, it is worth what they charge for.
Well, it wasn't at first, but now that they've added so many titles,
yeah, exactly.
I would say it's getting there. I mean, they just added Red Dead Redemption to follow suit with Xbox, which added backwards compatibility.
The last time I checked, and this was like 6 months ago, at least they had over 300 titles.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's well over. I think Sony said they were doing 100 titles a month or something like that.
Oh my God. Wow.
I thought I heard that number. Someone needs to fact check this. Maybe I'll fact check this after we're done recording this. But I thought I remember hearing some crazy thing like that. And I don't, I mean, obviously I'm not counting all the titles that they're adding all the time. So maybe people are overlooking how many titles are actually being added to that thing.
Yeah.
I should probably subscribe to it again for a little while and see what they got.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they're adding that many games, if they've got that many games, it's basically Netflix for games at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
And it runs incredibly well. Like, I mean, yeah, for what it is, yeah, it is very performant.
I played Ratchet and Clank up. What was it?
Did you just do the trial? The 14-day or whatever?
I did the trial. I played like the Ratchet and Clank game they did before the PS4 remake of the original one, Into the Nexus or something. Yeah, it was super smooth. I thought I was playing a game locally on the machine.
Wow.
So yeah, whatever voodoo they have in there in those server racks, it's working. Probably because it's literally a PS3 playing the game and you're just getting like the video and you're sending back the controller input. That's probably how it works so well, because you're not actually rendering the game so much as streaming video of the game being played. So yeah. it's like Twitch plays Pokemon, except you're the one playing it. Twitch plays every PlayStation game in existence.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. We'd appreciate if you could show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here by becoming a regular sustaining donator. Donate a dollar every month via Patreon. You can do that today by going to patreon.com/hologram radio. It really does make a difference. Subscribe to the show in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week, or your favorite podcast player of choice. Wherever you can find podcasts, we should be there. We're on TuneIn and Stitcher and now Google Play as well. And we'd appreciate a review wherever you can leave it, because it makes us feel good and it also helps other people discover the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. You can find us on Facebook as well if you just search for Hologram Radio. And you can send us email the old fashioned. You can send us email the old fashioned way if you'd like to send us some feedback. That email goes to the both of us. It is theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.